lots of interesting stories to touch on. Scotty, welcome back to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I was a bit concerned, though, when you said the big guest, and I was like, okay, well, that's fair. It is a pandemic. It's been hard to get out. I admit to, you know, like, life is different. So some of us put on some pandemic pounds, but fair enough. I mean, you call them how you see them. I'm okay with that.
Okay. Are you on the quarantine 15? Is that what you're saying?
I didn't know there was such a thing, but it is, of course, a different world for all of us, and that includes, you know, I think about the normal travel schedules, and normally would have been, you know, out at training camp and start a season somewhere, and, you know, maybe working on stuff, and instead we sort of hunkered down and watching from afar, at least for the first part of the season. So it is a constant adjustment. There's no question about that.
So, Scott, let's look. You know, it's very early in the NHL season, and I'm already liking just the excitement and the angst. The games themselves hasn't been overly physical yet to see, you know, the animosity that might come from miniseries, but definitely the angst I find is there, that you don't want to get swept in a miniseries already. No one in the North Division's done it. The Oilers are going to try to avoid that tonight, and it seems to make early season games with just a little bit more importance.
Well, there's no question about it. And I think, I mean, the North is the obvious one. And maybe because, you know, with seven teams, the number of games is different than even in the three American-based divisions, where you're playing each divisional opponent eight times. And you're right. There is even from watching afar, I sense the kind of urgency. Like, this, I think this is an important game for the Edmonton Oilers. And we're less than a week into the season. And I think you've seen how coaches have reacted. You know, Dave Tippett is one. You know, Ethan Bear not being in the lineup. And you know, I don't speak for Dave Tippett, but my guess is this isn't about Ethan Bear played terribly and he doesn't deserve to be in the lineup, but rather sending that message to the rest of the lineup that, you know, what we've seen on a couple of nights is not acceptable. And so we're going to make this change. And, you know, I think of David Quinn in New York with the Rangers. It looked abysmal in their 4-0 season opening loss against the New York Islanders, made a number of changes, including benching Tony DeAngelo. He was one of the top restricted free agents in the offseason and a dynamic young player. Benched him. They came back and they won 5-0. I think you're seeing in the Keith Yandle situation in Florida, there's a pressure on Joel Quenneville there and new GM Bill Zito. We must change the culture here. We must change how we approach the games. And because the games are so much more meaningful, you know, they didn't wait a week or two before they said, you know what, we don't know that Keith Yandle fits us. This happened before the puck dropped on their very first game. Of course, he scored a goal. They win against Chicago. I think the urgency everywhere is apparent, and I think you're seeing coaches pushing buttons earlier than they might otherwise push them in an 82-game schedule.
Scott, what's your sense from coaches and around the league about the limited, if basically no practice time for their teams? Is this going to be make it a little more chaotic this season?
Yeah, and it definitely will. Although I think if you talk to the coaches over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, and, you know, I spent a year in Dallas, and I know Ken Hitchcock and I had this conversation often, is that, you know, for the most part, even with the bye week built in, and I know a lot of people didn't like it, but it's hard to teach. It's hard to get in teaching moments, hard to get practice time in. Now the schedule is already fluid. We already know that it's going to be backloaded because Dallas and their COVID outbreak has forced the NHL already to rework their schedule. So practice time is going to be at a premium. The balance of rest and recuperation versus how much practice time can we shoulder in here? How much learning or teaching can be accomplished during this 56-game race to the playoffs? I think it's going to be fascinating. And it's been interesting to see younger teams early on. You know, I just love what DJ Smith has done in Ottawa. Team plays hard. They did it all last year. You wonder at some point, is that going to come back the lack of real teaching time during the season, does that hurt Ottawa or does it help them in a 56-game run? David Quinn with the Rangers is going to feel the same way. We know the Kings and Anaheim are both young and rebuilding. Detroit, again, losing a difficult game against Columbus today, but they've looked good and have worked hard. But at some point, does the lack of teaching and practice, does it hurt them? And do we see sort of water finding its own level because those young teams maybe they can't do as much teaching as they would like to?
With all due respect to some of the other teams in the Central Division, it feels like Tampa should have a relatively easy path compared to guys, you know, that maybe on the Eastern side or even the North Division, the Canadian Division. You know, will that maybe... Do they need a bit of an easier schedule through there, considering they won the Stanley Cup, or do they want to kind of keep their edge by going against really, you know, good opponents all the time, like some of the other contenders may have in the other divisions?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair, and it'll be interesting to see how that Central Division, you know, sort of shakes out. I really like Columbus. I love John Tortorella and how he coaches that team, but, you know, their win against Detroit was their first after losing two in a row to Nashville. Nashville's a team desperate to sort of reassert itself as a potential Stanley Cup contender. I really like Carolina. I love how they're built. Of course, they lose to Detroit in their second game, a very big game for them coming up early on against Nashville. But you're right. I mean, even without Nikita Kucherov, Tampa should be the cream of that division. And it does. I think it's a really interesting question. As a Stanley Cup champion, you know, you want to be tested. You want to be reminded that everyone's gunning for you every night. If it comes too easily to you, if you build such a cushion early on, and that's something that could certainly happen with Tampa in that Central Division, does it hurt you down the road? Is it harder to get your edge back? Now, maybe the fact it's only a 56-game schedule, that works to your advantage. The fact is that you've got Steven Stamkos, who's back, and again, after missing so much time with injury and all but one period or whatever it was in the playoffs and mm-hmm. his dramatic goal in the Stanley Cup final. But this is an important season for Steven Stamkos. So I think within that room, there's going to be lots of motivation to stay sharp all the way through. And maybe the fact that you're only playing 56 games is actually better for Tampa. If you build a big lead and you're, you know, at game 60 of 82, and it is hard to keep your foot on the gas. But that Central is going to be interesting. You know, Dallas, Stanley Cup finalists, haven't even played a game yet. So, and it's hard to know where they're going to be at without Tyler Seguin for the long term and without Ben Bishop to start the season. How does that affect Anton Khudobin as, you know, sort of the starter right from the get-go? Lots of questions there. But it is going to be interesting to see just how Tampa sort of settles into their role as defending champions in a season where you're only going to see seven other teams until the playoffs.
Scott Burnside joins us from The Athletic. Scott, what are you hearing in regards to, do you think teams are going to be more patient with coaches just because of payroll and having to pay a second one if you fire a first one, or maybe promote an assistant coach? I don't know. But what's your thoughts on that? I sense that teams are going to be more patient. Plus, a lot of them changed coaches last year anyway.
Yeah, I argued that the over-under, if you set it at two, I would take the under for in-season coaching changes. To me, it's when you look around the NHL, it's not necessarily where the pressure points are going to be, but what are the obvious plan Bs? I guess if I had to pick, you know, sort of one team, do you have to keep a closer eye on a team like Pittsburgh where, you know, Mike Sullivan, of course, goes back-to-back in 16 and 17, winning the Stanley Cup, but two very disappointing playoff exits following that. We know that Jim Rutherford, the GM, is not afraid to be bold. It's not afraid to make moves. So I wonder about that. And that was a significant shootout win for them over Washington, their first win after two pretty ugly losses against Philadelphia. But listen, Mike Sullivan is a high-end elite coach. So, you know, he's got, I think, a lot of leash there. And some of those teams that didn't make the playoffs, of course, the seven non-return-to-play teams, most of them are early on in new coaching regimes. And the only other exception to that is Jeff Blashill in Detroit. And my sense is if Steve Eiserman was going to make a coaching change for a Detroit team that still has miles to go before they're back in anywhere near contention, he would have done so already. I think Jeff Blasio will coach through this year, and then maybe Steve Eiserman takes stock again in the offseason. But I just think there are a lot of coaches who are either, you know, sort of well-established with good teams or are early in their tenures with teams that are still sort of lower down the evolutionary curve. So I think with a shortened season, I don't think you'll see much coaching in-season change activity in the way that we would probably during most normal 82-game schedules.
Scotty Bernstein joins us from The Athletic. And Scotty, I read your 10 bold predictions on The Athletic, and there were some great ones. The one that kind of jumped off the page at me was your bold prediction that Jonathan Quick would be traded out of L.A., and he's got two more years after this year. Is there enough tread left on those tires for a team to pick up, which is not a crazy cap hit, but just under $6 million?
Yeah, there was, I think, a fair amount of discussion about Jonathan Quick last year. Wasn't having a particularly great season, so that sort of died away. And it is hard, you know, we see it occasionally with, you know, sort of those big in-season goaltending moves where a team's trying to sort of shore up. I think of Ryan Miller going to St. Louis. And, you know, it does happen occasionally, but not all that often, because it's hard for goaltenders to sort of acclimatize themselves on the run. But I think with 56 games, I think with the number of teams that have potential goaltending questions. I mean, Edmonton is no question there, right? What is Ken Holland going to do with his goaltending as this season moves along? And I think Jonathan Quick is a guy that you could possibly draw a line from A to B. I'm assuming the Kings would eat some salary. He doesn't have trade protection. So if there's a team that wants him and the Kings want to make that kind of move, they can do so. And my guess is that they would eat some of that salary. I think of a team like Carolina. You know, is James Reimer and Peter Mrazek, is that a Stanley Cup tandem? Discuss amongst yourself. Maybe not. And again, the injury issues that I think are going to pop up, you know, I think of Washington that began the season hoping that Henrik Lundqvist was going to be a mentor and really push Samsonov a goal there. Of course, Henrik Lundqvist gone for the season with his heart issues. Is that a team that could bring in a veteran goaltender at some point leading up to the trade deadline to bolster a playoff run in for my mind, by far the hardest division in the NHL? So I just think there's lots of possibilities there. And my guess is that Jonathan Quick will bounce back. Bill Ranford's one of the best goaltending coaches in the NHL. If it's going to happen, I think it happens this year. And I'm fascinated to see if Jonathan Quick does end up somewhere else. And we've seen some players who played a long time in one market moving to another, a breath of fresh air. I think it would be fascinating dynamic to see if Jonathan Quick does end up somewhere else and if he can recapture some of that mojo that helped the Kings win cups in 2012 and 14.
Scotty, always good to catch up with you. One last one quickly, the baseball style series. I believe for a variety of reasons, the NHL should look at it. You can't do every series, I understand that, because some teams, if you're going to go back to conference, play, you know, you play each other twice, but you could have it where one year Edmonton goes to Toronto, plays two games in Toronto. The next year they come there. So you could do it more if you like. It saves on travel. It saves on fatigue for your players. There's a lot of benefits. Do you think the NHL would look at even 20-40% of the games being played that way?
Yeah, I really think they will look at it, and I think it'll be fascinating to see, because my understanding in the past is it's been really, it's television that hasn't liked the idea of having teams play each other in clumps like this. And maybe the product and maybe the interest will, it won't diminish, and so the TV people could be convinced to go for it, but definitely save on the travel costs. And I like the urgency and the animosity that it's almost like a built-in little mini playoff series early in your season. I don't think that's a bad thing either. And so I would think this could be one of those things that does carry over, hopefully, once we get back to a normal 82-game pattern.
Yeah, it's something I would definitely look at for sure. Scott, good to catch up with you, man. Enjoy the season. We'll talk to you throughout.
Okay, anytime, guys.